The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Our guest now is Kim Do. He's head of multi-asset strategy at Baring Asset Management Asia. He is in town for the Asia-Pacific Fund Outlook and Strategy, CEF Conference here in New York. And we are very pleased to have him in studio, only getting to New York once or twice a year. And so glad, Kim, that you could take time for us today on the show. Thanks.
Hello. Thank you very much, Catherine. I'm very pleased to be here.
So let's start with the Chinese economy because we got some strong numbers. And of course, you know, there is a bit of skepticism about the validity of China's economic reports compared to other, you know, big, rich, industrialized countries. So what is your take on the numbers today and the economy more broadly in China?
If you have a look at the PMI data, which came out a few weeks ago, and if you look at electricity consumption, I think that all those indicators are suggesting that the deceleration in the Chinese economy has stopped, and we are starting to see a gradual recovery. So that's why in the weekend you see industrial production numbers rising. Retail sales always strong, running at about 14 to 15% per annum. And today, I think that the only thing about China which is not great is export growth. But then export growth depends very much, as you said before, on the health of the economy in the US and Europe, which is still a bit questionable at the moment.
Well, exports rising less than forecast. I mean, it's still pretty significant because if retail sales were up 14.9%, but there's no additional growth to support the lack of exports, if you like. Mm-hmm. What do they do? I mean, they need to stimulate domestic demand.
I think that, yes, domestic demand, if anything, I think that is going to be the key driver of growth in China. It has been the case over the last few months, and it will continue to be the case, we think, over the next 12 months or so. As far as the domestic economy in China is concerned, in fact, it's still doing quite well because the economy is still growing at the rate of something like between 7 to 8% per annum. And the government, if anything, continues to be quite supportive of the domestic consumption trend and also infrastructure spending in China.
How is it supportive of the domestic spending trend? I mean, it's clamping down on speculation on housing market, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What's it doing for the person on the street?
Well, I think that what it does for the person in the street is that instead of the person in the street worrying about not being able to afford housing, the government, as you know, actually has embarked on a massive program to build more public housing, or what they call economic housing. And economic or public housing basically is the lower level of property in China, so it is not as luxurious as the expensive private properties, but it is sufficient, you know, for family which moves from the rural community to the urban sector or the urban centers in order to find jobs there. So I think that the number of housing at the public level is something like 10 million houses which are going to be built, and I think that they build about two-thirds or four-fifths of that already. And I think they will continue to do that.
You know, China just concluded the the Party Congress, which is so important, this big, you know, every decade change in leadership. Mm-hmm. What does that change in leadership mean to your view for China?
I don't think there will be massive changes, you know. But what will happen, obviously, is that China has built massive amounts of highways, railways, ports, airports. So I think that the focus of the next few years is to actually improve the urban infrastructure because of the massive urbanization process going on in China over the last few years. And so I think that there has been congestion in the traffic, for instance, in Beijing, Shanghai, Guangdong. So in those urban centers, they need to actually improve the infrastructure. So that includes transport systems, that includes housing, hospitals, schools, and all that. So I think that's the focus of the infrastructure in the urban centers.
So, do you see then that also then as a domestic job creator based on what's happening in the domestic economy, which would support a move towards more domestic consumption, because that's been the big rap against China. You just mentioned the weaker export growth. It's been mm-hmm. such an export-led model. Mm-hmm. But making that transition is very tough.
Is it tough? I don't think it is tough. I think that it's all part of the big plan of China anyway. So, and China has the funding capability to do so. Because if you look at the budget deficit at the federal level or at the government level, it is very small. In fact, if you look at the debt outstanding of the government as a proportion of GDP, you might not believe this, but it's only about 15 to 16%, 15 or 60% of GDP. So in fact, the government can do a lot more in the urban cities in order to try to make it a more comfortable place to live. So the government has the balance sheet to do things if they wanted to.
That would entail opening up its economy a lot more, though.
Yeah, markets. I think that would be the plan of the new government. Obviously, what they have done to date is build the infrastructure for the economy to do well. But what they haven't done is to free up, as you quite rightly pointed out, to deregulate the financial sector, to open it up to foreign companies to come in. And I think that will be the next step. Definitely, that will be the next step. So over the next 10 years, I think that you will see massive developments and deregulation in the financial sector to allow foreign companies to come in and borrow renminbi, lend out renminbi. So that will be part of the plan, yeah.
And what growth rate is China aiming for in the next 5 years? So?
I think that it would be difficult for them to aim for anything less than 7 to 7.5%. Over the last 10 years, I think that the growth rate has been more like 10%. But I don't think that we can return to that because, as I said, lots of the infrastructure, mega infrastructure projects like railways and have been built. So I think that 7.5% is what we're looking for.
Kim, we talked about some of these big picture issues, and I want to get into specific industries and even some companies our audience could look at.
Sure.
But I think when Mervyn King is talking about imbalances and currency imbalances, you know, China has one of the biggest imbalances in the world. And you said, hey, well, China has this great budget surplus. They barely have a deficit. They've got all these reserves they can use. Yeah, mm-hmm. over $2 trillion in dollar-based reserves. Mm-hmm. But many say that this is still a problem. Sure, China can use it productively. At the same time, even beginning to pull the dollars out of the reserves and spend them and use them is a big issue.
Yes, I think that the imbalances are still there, but I must say that they have been reduced. I think that's good news because if you look at the size of the trade surplus as a proportion of the GDP, they have been shrinking. So, and the government push is to motivate consumption. And if they motivate consumption, that means that households in China will consume more of the U.S. goods. And not only just importing into their shore, but actually traveling. So, you know, the dollar spending by Chinese tourists is growing very, very fast. So I think that one thing the U.S. Economy and people here can do is to welcome the Chinese tourists. Why not? Because they are heading to Europe, they're heading to Japan. So why not? Why shouldn't they head to the USA?
You know, we also discovered that actually the jobless rate was double what we had thought the official figure was. So the urban jobless rate in July, 8.1%, and that's based on a survey of about 8,500 households. So a pretty decent sized survey. Mm-hmm. 8.1% it's pretty grim, as we well know.
Yeah, I think that the one thing about the surveys of jobless in China is not very well followed, I must say. So I think that the size of the sample is a bit small, but I do agree. I think that perhaps there has been a little bit more immigrants moving from the rural community to the urban centers. And as the economies have been slowing down due to the lack of exports and so on and so forth, so maybe that has had an impact on some of the new immigrants from the rural side to the urban center. But that's why coming back to the fact that the government will have to try to continue to grow the economy between 7 to 8% of next few years in order to make sure that they absorb the new immigrants from the country to the urban centers.
Kim, your outlook for China, when we look at industries, mm-hmm. one of the places you're you have see positive growth is healthcare. And this
That's
reminds
right.
me to a certain extent of the United States. Aging populations just naturally consume more healthcare.
Yes.
You have a chart showing the expenditure on healthcare in China as a percent of GDP, very low relative to the rest of the world. You say there's a lot more to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. The challenge for a fund manager like ourselves is to be able to find good companies to buy. And in the Chinese universe, in fact, the healthcare companies, it's so difficult to find cheap and liquid ones. So from time to time, we actually have to look beyond, you know, beyond China. So when we look beyond China, we can find some healthcare stocks in Thailand. And so we, in the portfolio, we actually own a number of companies in the Thai market to represent, you know, the growth in healthcare.
One of them you're talking about, the conference, is Bangkok Dusit Medical.
Yes, it is a private hospital, which actually is involved in all kinds of healthcare and medical activities, which are not properly offered by the public hospital. So as you know, in fact, a number of rich ladies actually tend to go to Thailand in order to get services to.
You're trying to say this very diplomatically.
To keep their youth, you know, and so on and so forth. So,
good creams then.
Yes. Exactly. So anyway, so that is a very big business in Thailand. Very, very big business in Thailand. And luckily for us, we were able to find stocks which are listed on the exchange so that we can buy that. Yeah.
When you look at China, when you look at technology and the internet in particular, mm-hmm. that's such a big growth area in the
yes.
United States. It spun off so many companies and businesses. What is your view when it comes to investing in China?
Well, China, as you know, you have the equivalent of the Google in the name of Baidu. Baidu has had a number of issues related to it on the basis that, you know, the government or the SEC is asking for, you know, a number of auditing companies to take a look at that and so on. So Baidu is one. Tencent is another. Tencent has a number of games and a number of facilities like an email system or SMS system,
mm-hmm.
but you don't actually use your name, you use numbers. So it's quite an interesting way of communicating because you don't have to actually reveal your name. You actually have
a
number system on the Tencent. So anyway, that is definitely a very big growth area in China.
I want to point to the dislocation between the Shanghai Composite Index and the Hang Seng.
Mm-hmm.
The Shanghai Composite Index, it's actually improved in the last week, but it's still down about 5.25% for the year.
That's right.
The Hang Seng is up almost 21%.
That's right, yeah.
What's the dislocation? Where is that coming from?
Right. The Shanghai market represents the mainland Chinese stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Hang Seng obviously is more dependent on the global trend. And as far as the Chinese stock market is concerned, it has not been in favor over the last 2 years. And the reason is basically to do with monetary tightening. The government has been tightening monetary policy for 2 years now, and until recently when they relaxed it a little bit. And also, wealthy Chinese individuals have been playing the property market. They
mm-hmm.
have not been interested in the stock market. And as a result, the Shanghai market has been acting like an orphan. Whereas in the case of the Hang Seng has zero interest rate policy like the Fed, because the Hang Seng, in fact, Hong Kong adopts the American monetary policy. So with zero interest rates, people have been pouring money into the Hang Seng equity market.
What does the Shanghai Composite Index represent? If you put some money in there, are you making a play on China, on the economy, or is it just a random sampling of companies that are very attached to government policies?
The Shanghai Index has obviously a lot of public publicly owned companies, the banks, the telecoms companies, the utilities, and so on. So yes, it is China, but it is mostly the state-owned enterprises who are, you know, mostly government-owned. So that's what you buy in the Shanghai
Kim,
index.
Quick final question, because I know you focus a lot on smartphones. Which companies, which countries? We're not just talking China. We're talking about the whole Asia region. Which ones do you like best?
Well, Samsung Electronics is the best.
Really? Beating Apple?
Yeah. very worthy competitor of Apple, iPhone, obviously, and iPad. But we also have a number of places in Taiwan as well. There are quite a number of companies which are servicing either Samsung or servicing Apple. So
Samsung's up 41% year to date.
Yes, that's right, beating Apple. I think Apple is only up about 35
or
36%.
More to go on Samsung?
At a high now.
Well, I think that Samsung is more diversified. Apple is about iPod, iPhone, iPad, and so on and so forth. But Samsung has DRAM, and it also has many other businesses as well. So Samsung is just more diversified.
Well, Kim Do, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have you back soon.
Catherine.
Even if you're not in studio, we're going to wake you up in the middle of the night.
Thank you very much indeed. Okay. That's a pleasure, Voni. That's a pleasure, Catherine.
Thank you.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012 Bloomberg LP.